Hello and welcome to the No More Tech Podcast, the show where I'll try to answer your technology questions. I'm Devinder Hardwar, I'm a technology blogger at Engadget, and I podcast about movies and TV at slashfilm.com. And today I really just wanted to focus on the lead up to Christmas and buying tech gifts and things like that. I know this is coming a little late. I guess it probably wasn't a good idea to start a new podcast as soon as I had a baby. Probably not smart. So I can't really guarantee this is a show that's going to be coming out every week. I'll try to make it at least bi-weekly and at least try to get something out around big events like Christmas. And before I get into things here, I just want to remind you, I would love your tech questions. That's kind of what's fueling the show. I get a ton, honestly, daily in real life and on Twitter, just randomly. But it's nice to get a bunch of questions, especially suited for this show. And you could do that either with the forum at nomoretech.net/ask, and that's no with a K. That's a simple Google form there, or you can email me at nomoretechpodcast@gmail.com. The form is honestly a lot easier. And you can also just record a question. I suggest using the Memo app on your phone and either drop that over email or in a link on the form. So you're probably not surprised to hear that I get a lot of questions about buying tech gifts in general, especially around Christmas. But you know, this is a year-round thing. And before I get to specific products, probably the best advice I could give you is just to think about how you actually give somebody a tech product. And, you know, there's just so much these days. It's pretty easy just to, you know, buy somebody the latest, newest thing. But I think there's a lot that really goes into it, especially if it's for somebody, you know, that you care about and you don't want to burden them with a terrible device. First of all, and probably most importantly, you really just want to make sure the gift you're buying is something somebody's actually going to use. Seriously, an expensive gift won't really matter if nobody actually wants to take it out of the box or use it day to day. And this probably comes out of my IT background, but I'm not a huge fan of forcing new technology on people, especially if they're just not used to that sort of thing. You could probably give people a push, though, just a little bit. I do think my parents are FaceTiming me a lot more now that they have a grandchild that they want to see as often as possible. So, yeah, that's sort of a push for older users and for people who just don't normally want to deal with video chat to actually do that. So if you think about the value of a product and how you'd convey that to someone, you know, that would go a long way to actually making them use your gift. And of course, whatever you end up buying, make sure you do your research. There are a ton of websites out there right now, including Engadget. But I also really like Wirecutter, and I'm still the sort of person that ends up furiously Googling whatever product I'm looking for as I winnow down, you know, the types of choices I have and where to buy it. So, for example, if you're trying to get somebody a tablet, probably not worth buying them the cheapest thing you can find. And if they're an Android user, giving them an iPad probably won't be very good either because it's not going to really be cross-compatible with their smartphone. So just really think about the product you're buying and who you're buying it for. And if you're getting something for somebody who's not really into tech, even if you don't think you know much on your own, the fact that you're listening to this podcast and maybe trying to learn more is a good sign. And that puts you a step above most people who are dealing with every new device. So for that sort of person, I'd really recommend setting some time aside to help them set up whatever you're buying them and, you know, work through how to use it. Even if you're not an expert in that, a little assistance can probably go a long way. And that's honestly how I ended up learning a lot of my tech trade and tech knowledge. It's not like I know everything, but I do try to go into problems and troubleshooting scenarios with the mindset that, you know, we can figure it out and I'll try not to be afraid of specific new technologies. That was definitely a big deal when I was working in college and dealing with all sorts of things like corporate networks and, you know, corporate databases and a lot of things that I don't even deal with today, but I had to learn how to use them and how to help people with them. And of course, when it comes to helping somebody with all this stuff, you should probably be prepared to just be on-call tech support. That could be a good thing, honestly. That could be a way to connect you with a friend or a family member. But it probably can get annoying after a while. Just know that, you know, that's probably what you're going into. And finally, definitely look into what comes in the box of whatever you're buying. I think most products today usually include all the cables you need to just get started, but there could be other accessories. There could be batteries that aren't included. Unfortunately, that's still a thing that happens. I even just ran into this problem at Engadget. I was reviewing the PlayStation Classic, which is not a great device. Would not recommend it as a gift, just putting that out there. But it doesn't come with an AC adapter, which is a baffling choice to me, because it's not like a device that you could just plug into any USB port and power it up. So the actual power connection is USB, and you'd think you could just plug it in anywhere. But I tried it on my OLED TV. I tried it on, you know, the Xbox One and a couple other PCs, and it just wouldn't get enough power to actually start up. So I had to yank out the cable from my Chromecast Ultra AC adapter and just plug it in there. So yeah, laziness won out. That's typically the way it goes. But I can imagine somebody who gets a PlayStation Classic and doesn't have an extra AC adapter for USB hanging around. I think Sony's just assuming we have a ton of them these days, but not everybody has them. And it's kind of annoying when you get a new gift like that, where you have to go find an extra accessory. You'll probably be able to find it at a store easily, but that's not a good start to Christmas morning for any kid, for sure. Overall, I think my advice really just boils down to thinking exactly about what you're buying and who you're buying it for and why you're buying it and if they'll actually use it. I think this really goes for any gift, not just tech gifts, but there seems to be a sense where you could just give somebody a shiny new iPad and assume they'll love it instantly. I found that not to be the case, honestly. So let's move on to questions. I have one from Hemant Nedu about buying tablets for their kids. And very sorry this is coming so close to Christmas, but maybe I could still offer up some help here. He writes, "We want to get our sons, ages 5 and 8, tablets for Christmas. We have old iPads right now and are an Apple household, but we're not willing to spend the money on new iPads. I've been looking at the Samsung tablets, but I haven't been keeping up with what's out there, so I'm a bit overwhelmed. Really, we just want something that will play YouTube and Minecraft with the possibility of other games. Looking at a budget of around 250 Canadian, which is probably 200 USD. So cheap tablets, there's good and bad for that. I've talked about Amazon's Fire tablets before. I think they're really great for kids, especially the kids' versions of them, which come with really strong protective cases, and I believe no questions asked warranties for 2 years. Both of those are pretty indispensable features. Kids will drop these things, and they will definitely break them at some point. So having the peace of mind where no matter what happens, that you'll just get it replaced, I think is pretty great. And right now, Amazon is offering some sales. I'd really recommend looking at the Fire HD 8 Kids Edition, which has 32 gigabytes of storage. Normally, it's $130, but right now, it's $90. And the 10-inch edition is $150. Typically, it's $200, so pretty hefty savings there. The big downside is that you're stuck within Amazon's app ecosystem, which has most of what you need, doesn't have direct YouTube support. There's a bit of a war going on between Google and Amazon right now. I believe Amazon and Apple have had issues like this, and they're only starting to resolve that right now. As for YouTube, there is a shortcut app, I believe, and also with the web browsers on the Fire HD tablets, you can just access the website. So I don't think it's a huge deal that there's no YouTube app. And from what I've seen, it seems to work pretty well. So you're not really missing much. These are pretty inexpensive tablets. They have decent screens. They're great for video. But I think the main benefit here is that durability with the case and the warranty. There are some games in the ecosystem as well, but your kids will have to live without the latest new things that are coming to the iPad. And even though these are Android tablets, I actually think they're pretty, disconnected from any real ecosystem. Most of the Google apps aren't on here by default because of that little war they're having. So these are a nice little standalone thing. Even if you have iPhones, it should be just fine. Another option is just looking for older or refurbished tablets, either refurbished iPads. Apple's also had some sales lately. I got the most recent iPad from this year for $250, but that's probably going to be a little over your budget. There is older hardware out there. When it comes to Android tablets, yeah, Samsung is making the best ones. And I'd say the Galaxy Tab S3, if you could find that around at a cheap price, is probably a great deal. Those are great screens. They've had OLED from the beginning, whereas that's something no iPads had. So worth checking out. Next up is Glenn Thomas, who asks, "I'm looking to replace my Lenovo Mix 700, which recently got the white light of death, but I'm having trouble finding the right solution. The ideal machine would be fanless, have 8 gigabytes, I assume, of RAM, be able to handle some light Illustrator and Animate work with a nice screen that's good for Netflix. The obvious choice is one of the Surface variants, but they can get pretty pricey pretty quickly. Is there an option I might be overlooking? A traditional clamshell with a touchscreen certainly intrigues." So, Glenn, I have to say the Lenovo Mix 700, that was a great service competitor from a couple of years ago. But yeah, that was Lenovo's attempt to really compete with whatever Microsoft was doing. I'd highly recommend just looking at what's going on with the Surface lineup this year. There have been some great bundle deals with the Surface Pro 6, and even last year's Surface Pro is still a pretty capable and fast machine. They basically just had a slight CPU upgrade this year and a slightly better screen. So you'd be fine with last year's model. And I've seen that one available with the keyboard and the pen for around $600 with various deals. So just keep an eye out. I really like slickdeals.net for looking for things like this. Take a look at Microsoft Store as well. There might be some refurbished ones that pop up once in a while. But your best option, if you really like the Mix 700, is to go for a Surface device. And a traditional clamshell with touchscreen, honestly, they're a dime a dozen. They're all over the place these days. It really depends on what you're looking for. If you like the Mix and you want a device that has a detachable screen, it's not really worth going with the traditional clamshell laptop thing. If you are annoyed by the kickstand on the Mix 700 and not being able to use it well, maybe when you're on the subway or a train or something, then look at the other options. And I really like the Surface laptop. I probably sound like a Microsoft fanboy here, but I honestly just think they're making great products. And they're doing the sorts of things with PCs, you know, pushing the form factor forward a little that we used to expect from Apple. So I'm just really impressed with all of that stuff. But Dell's XPS 13, if you want a straightforward Windows laptop with a gorgeous borderless screen that also has touchscreen capabilities, just look at that. That's I feel like you can't go wrong with that machine. Next up, there's Justin, who asks, I'm looking into buying a Fitbit for when I work out at the gym. The problem is that there are so many different types out there. Any recommendations? So, fitness bands. We're not really hearing much about them these days. It feels like the hype around them, especially after Jawbone collapsed and smartwatches really didn't do what we wanted them to do or get as big as we expected. It seems like the hype around this entire category is going away. But I think what really happened is that they just became pretty capable. And also, our smartphones ended up doing a lot of those things as well. Like, every smartphone now can track your footsteps and the stairs you've climbed. So the people who really need fitness bands are the people who are going to the gym and just really care more about seeing exact fitness data. And in that respect, Fitbit is still the best overall. I really like the Fitbit Charge 3 in terms of like a best all-around device. But they also have some other models. There's also the Fitbit Flex 2, which is super slim, doesn't have a visible screen. But, you know, it's easier to deal with. If you just want the data, you don't want to really mess around with the screen. It can do a bunch of stuff. It doesn't have a heart rate monitor, I think, which if you're actually working out, that's probably one of the best things you'd want in a fitness band. Personally, I've just been using the most recent Apple Watch. The Series 4 just does so many things really well. I'm really interested in the heart rate tracking features. And in terms of working out, I usually just run whenever I can or do a bit of elliptical work. So Apple Watch is perfectly fine for that. And the Series 4 is also better at GPS tracking. And there are a lot of compatible apps, too. It's also something I could just wear day to day. It's also a pretty good looking device. It doesn't just look like a fitness tracker. But if you're going to the gym often, the Apple Watch probably doesn't make the most sense. For runners in particular, I know Garmin's VivoFit devices, runners really like their GPS tracking and their great battery life, so that's also another option, and it's pretty gym-friendly too. Our next question comes from Larry Vargas, and this is about a topic I'm really passionate about. He asks, what's the best way to dispose of really old tech? My wife has an ancient Sony Vaio laptop, I have an old Roku, some old crappy PC speakers, and a writhing nest of old AV Ethernet cables. I wish someone could use this stuff, but so old and newer, better, and cheaper versions of all this stuff is so readily available. So what do we do with all this old tech crap? I don't want to add more to a landfill, not to mention all the boxes and plastic all this stuff came from. Are we stuck with this stuff forever? I live in LA and can't afford another room or garage to add to my ever-growing tech mausoleum. Sorry this got a little existential. I don't blame you, Larry. Tech recycling and just getting rid of all this old stuff, it really piles up. Maybe for normal folks who aren't super tech geeks, it's probably a little more manageable. Maybe you could just have a drawer of old phones or something. But yeah, it's easy to get a pile of stuff, especially with my job, where I get a pile of stuff. These companies don't always want them back. So my only choice is to either give them away or somehow just dump them. So what we all need is just a way to recycle electronics. And my first bit of advice would be to do some Googling for wherever you live and look up electronic recycling centers. They're usually around big metropolitan areas. Here in New York, we have one in Brooklyn. And that's just the easiest way to deal with all this stuff. Of course, you have to haul it there on your own and go within working hours. You can't just leave stuff at their doorstep. But go there, figure out when they're open, and take whatever you need. I've also done TaskRabbits, where I've just piled up a bunch of junk in a couple of boxes. I've hired a TaskRabbit at, I don't know, what is it, $15 to $20 an hour to just haul it over and send me a proof of life photo or something. And it usually takes less than an hour, and it's worth it just to clear up my house a little. And if you don't have an electronics recycling center nearby, Best Buy also does quite a bit around that. I think you could just bring products there. It doesn't really matter where you bought it or who makes it. Best Buy should be able to deal with it on their own. And judging from their website, it looks like they do accept old computers, old TVs, old appliances, pretty much anything very techy. I definitely call your local store to make sure that they're accepting specific products, especially if you're bringing in something big and unwieldy. But it seems like overall, you're in luck with Best Buy. Just Google Best Buy electronics recycling and you'll get a look at their policies and all that stuff. If you have really big devices, I didn't know this, but it looks like they also have haul off service for things like big old TVs and appliances. It's $100, but they'll take away two appliances at once. And it looks like if you buy certain products like a new TV and you have Geek Squad set it up, which is an extra fee, don't forget, they will take away your old product. So that's a bit of a help. Glad to see that Best Buy is doing something about electronics recycling, because they're pretty much the only electronics store left, right? Radio Shack is gone. The office supply stores aren't really doing well. There's no more Office Max where I used to work. Circuit City is long gone. Staples is still around, and they're still doing their bit, but it seems like Best Buy has become the premier electronics spot, and that's why everybody wants to partner with them. And of course, the Apple store has certainly taken away a lot of business from what would be in a typical electronics store. I also did a bit of Googling for electronics recycling help around LA, Larry, and it seems like you're in luck. They often have events where they just invite people to come bring their stuff, but you should have easy access to a location just to dump your gear as well. And this is a topic that's a little near and dear to my heart. At one point in my IT work, I was the guy who had to manage all the electronics recycling for the entire campus. So I was knee deep, sometimes shoulder deep, in old Dell desktops and monitors, and just hauling those things into huge cardboard boxes. It was not my favorite thing in the world, but it gave me a lot of respect for the amount of junk that we accumulate and the need to just get rid of it. People who actually worked at the college would often just come and just leave their old gear as well, because they didn't know what else to do with it, and we helpfully just got it away. The one caveat I'll mention is that, electronics recycling is probably the best option most of us have access to. There are reports around how well the people who ultimately get these old products and break them down, it's unclear sometimes how well that actually happens, especially a lot of these things would get shipped to China to some facilities there, and didn't seem like those folks were actually doing a good job of breaking things down. Hopefully, this is something that I think more countries should be paying attention to, because we're accumulating a lot of crap, and it's not great for the environment, and there's a lot we can do with it as well. So we're seeing more companies reusing stuff from their old devices. I think Apple is using, you know, some old scrap metal from older machines in some newer devices. So that sort of thing is pretty useful as well. We definitely have to figure out a better way to reuse all this stuff. Our next question is kind of in line with something I was mentioning before about thinking about how you're going to help support somebody when you buy them a tech gift. Brian Dale writes, as a technologically inclined 40-something, I'm constantly helping family and older citizens fix tech issues. Most of these issues take very little time, but some take very long to fix and wouldn't be solvable by those who would own the devices. When will we see computers and phones become as easy to use as things like TVs and cars? This is a tough question because it really comes down to usability. I do think for a lot of consumers, there's a barrier in terms of what they're willing to deal with. You mentioned TVs and cars being easy to use, but you know, that's something I still think everybody has trouble with. Cars have gotten simpler because there's less mechanics around them. And most people don't actually deal with fixing or changing most things in their cars. They'll bring it somewhere, they'll bring it to the mechanics, they'll bring it somewhere to get an oil change. There's really just less of a need to get down and dirty, and I think cars have just become more reliable as well. TVs are pretty basic, but you know, getting those settings connected, look at the issues with motion smoothing and how people don't even know how to turn it off, and many people don't even see what the problem is. All these things aren't quite easy to use. It would be nice to have technology that kind of just works. That was the Apple model for a while, and I think they were really good at that. And even Apple now is coming into issues where their product designs aren't really human usable and don't really make a lot of sense. So this is a pretty tough and broad question, but I think it really comes down to the tech industry thinking a little bit harder about product design. Maybe we can't have something entirely designed by googly type engineers who probably don't interact as much with normal consumers and may miss some common issues that they would face. I will say we were making some progress. Even Windows, which used to be such a beast of a product, has gotten so much better recently. Windows 10 and Windows 7 was the big fix. But with Windows 10, like, you can, it's pretty stable. I think it's pretty self-explanatory in terms of fixing issues that pop up. And if it comes down to reinstalling Windows, that process is also just so much easier and faster than it ever was. I used to have to walk around with like CDs and serial numbers and a lot of things to do that in my IT work because there wasn't an easy way to do that. Now that's something that you could do with a couple clicks from the recovery menu, and that's probably not something most consumers even know about, but at least it's something you could figure out with a bit of troubleshooting, a bit of searching around on the internet. My dream is that this stuff just becomes user-friendly down the line. The tech should just be able to fix itself. It should be able to respond to our needs and answer our questions. Someday we'll have the all audio interface from the movie Her. Look at that movie, because there aren't many input devices. There are no keyboards. There are no mice. It's just people talking to machines and machines figuring out what they want. That's pretty much where we'll have to be headed. And finally, there's one last question from Randy M., who asks something that I've been thinking about for a while. He's wondering about 4K HDR projectors for the home. Are they feasible in the near future? Well, good news and bad news. They do exist. There are 4K projectors that do HDR, but they're really expensive right now. Sony has a 4K HDR projector with a ridiculous model name, but it goes for around $5,000. And there are cheaper options out there, too. Wirecutter recommends a JVC and also an Epson that get you 4K-like performance. It's actually using 1080p lenses, I believe, but it does support HDR, and those are going for much cheaper. The Epson 5040UB goes for $2,300 at Best Buy, and the JVC DLA X590R, it goes for $3,500. The big deal with projectors is that HDR, it just doesn't work as well on them compared to TVs. And that's due to a lot of things, but mainly it's because projectors just don't get as bright and can't handle things like local dimming that TVs can do. Over at CNET, Jeffrey Morrison wrote a great article about this called Why You Shouldn't Expect Great HDR from a Projector. He just really dives into this stuff and mainly focuses on the lower end. We saw a couple cheap 4K-ish projectors coming from like BenQ and Optima this year. And it really, you know, you get what you pay for. I'm looking forward to seeing what laser projection can do down the line, and maybe that'll help with some of the HDR capabilities. Basically, projectors just aren't in a great spot technologically compared to where TVs are now. And that's kind of a flip from a couple years ago. I have a 1080p projector I bought in 2014. I still use that. It's still great for movies. And as much as I love my OLED and HDR and everything, like sometimes I just want a giant honking image on my screen, especially if it's an older film. But I'm looking forward to the day when 4K projectors with good HDR are more affordable and readily available. And that's a wrap for this episode of No More Tech. I hope you all enjoy your holidays, no matter what you're celebrating. Hopefully you're just having fun with family and getting to watch a lot of good TV and movies. And hopefully you get some new toys to play with as well, because there's a lot of cool stuff this year. Once again, you can send me a question, please do, by going to nomoretech.net/ask, and that's no with a K, or email me at nomoretechpodcast@gmail.com. Our music comes from Mallory Johns, aka Malix, on SoundCloud. Check out her stuff there. If you're liking the show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes. That'd be super helpful. You can find me on Twitter at Devendra, and I write about tech at Engadget.com. And also check out my movie and TV podcast, the Slash Filmcast, at slashfilm.com. This is Devendra Hardwar, signing off.